This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Stephen Waters. How are you, Stephen?
Very well, thank you very much.
Excellent. We've been talking about training and we've been talking about some of the different courses you run. I want to just continue on with that. So you've got the managing your friends and you've also got that good to great, which is, I presume, is for people who have been running small teams for a while and then trying to step up to the next level.
Absolutely. So we started the business with Good to Great, and for 10 years there was only one program, which is Good to Great. The name came, by the way, I was thinking what to call it, and there's a great book called Good to Great, and I looked up at my business bookshelf, and you are allowed to reproduce titles are never copyrighted. So I called it Good to Great because I knew if I didn't call it something in the same week, then I'd end up doing what I often do, which is sort of prevaricating about what to call anything. So I called it Good to Great. And it is the second step up when you're moving from running shifts, when you're live, to general management or head chefing, or when actually your job is to create conditions in which people will do their best. So at the center of Good to Great is what we call the Climate Lab. So the idea that a manager's job now is not to manage in the same way that you manage a shift. When you manage a shift, to quote Danny Meyer, who, you know, had New York restaurateur and writer of Setting the Table and Enlightened Hospitality, when you get promoted to shift leader, you might as well be 7 foot tall and have a megaphone attached to your lips, because everybody's looking at you. They're wanting to reproduce your behaviors, your role modeling, what you want, and it's all happening live. When you're taking on, say, three teams as a general manager, so say a sort of like a typical casual dining restaurant, let's say you're responsible for the performance of the bar team, the floor team, and the kitchen team, then your job becomes different, and your job is to create a climate in which people will do their best. Loads of stuff has been written about climate in other sectors. I was really attracted to the idea when I came across it for the first time, the idea that working climate will have five components, and the manager's job is to make sure that they're doing good work on all five components of any working climate. The five components are clarity of purpose, clarity of standards, recognition of good performance, shared responsibility, and teamwork as a defining strength of the business. So Good to Great, 2 days of Good to Great, days 3 and 4 are the Climate Lab. And by the way, that is what Building Strong Brigades, our program for head chefs, is. It's just those 2 days. Sorry, I might have changed the subject a little bit there.
No, that's
Good
fine.
To Great, day one. It's psychometrically based. It's a great way for a group of people to get to know each other. Day one of the program is, you know, sharing experiences, and that's really, really important for people on the program. At the end of the program, you know, most people say they learned a lot more from the other people on the program who share the same context and share the same challenges than they did from any flip chart or any theory, you know, which is really there just to kind of support some of the ideas. So day one is get to know each other and get to know your thinking style. Day two is the first of what we call the Holy Trinity of skills, which is coaching. In my coaching qualification, a 5-day course, then having my own coach for coaching practice, and then another 5-day course. That's kind of distilled down into 1 day. So it's learning how to listen again, I suppose, is part of the process. How to create trust in a relationship through rapport, asking good, powerful, skillful questions, and helping people set goals. And again, it gets the whole program off to a really, really good start, because people feel like they're getting a real hard life skill, you know, being a coach, knowing what coaching is, how it's different from other helping approaches. You know, it deceptively looks like sports coaching, for example, or sports counseling. It looks a little bit like training, but it isn't. It looks a little bit like, you know, psychotherapy, even some of the time. So helping people get a sense that pure coaching, as it is known, content-free coaching, just being a good coach, irrespective of what you're coaching, is a skill that's going to sit at the heart of creating climate. A good climate has very strong teamwork, and teams stay as teams if they're feeling that they are being developed. Each individual in the team has got a trajectory of growth that they want. So chefs who are staging their way around the world, for example, they're on a very high trajectory. They want to learn a lot fast. They don't care where they're sleeping. They're sleeping on a friend's sofa while they're doing their bit around the world. And other people have a much lower trajectory. They're there because they like being a member of a team. They're there for paying the rent while they're on their way to being a journalist or something like that, for example. And, you know, other people are on a really, really a low trajectory, and it's the manager's job not to say one size fits all. You all must be developing at this rate. The manager's job is to recognize the preferred trajectory of individuals in the team and to give them a really simple personal development plan. And a personal development plan, again, sits at the heart of what we do. We advocate the idea that everybody in the team should have a personal development plan, even if that's only the manager sitting down with them for 5 minutes once a year and saying, how are things going for you? You know, right the way through to people who are being supported in their personal development plan in much greater depth. So that's day two. Day three and four is climate as described. And day five, I call why leading others begins with leading yourself. You know, the idea that it's not easy to get out of bed every morning or at 2 p.m. if you're doing a late shift that's going to run through to 3 a.m. the next morning, and to be your best every day. And again, there plenty is known at, you know, these days about, you know, how people set themselves up to do a good job each day, you know, mental rehearsal type of stuff. Again, it's different for everybody. So by day five of the program, I've got to know everybody on the program pretty well. And some day fives are very pragmatic. We're doing stuff on what's called the Eisenhower matrix on balancing the urgent and important. And basically it's time management, you know, using your time skillfully, very pragmatic. Right the way through to kind of long-term belief systems, you know, what's going on deep down inside you and what your ambitions are and what your beliefs need to be to get you where you want to be in the longer term. You know, for some people, it's an opportunity to meet other people in the industry, and they're not necessarily going to take a great deal away from it. For other people, you know, and have had some wonderful conversations on our celebrations on day five, I have run 135 Good to Greats now, which is 2,500 people, something like that. And some people say it changed their life, you know, it went as far as to do that. I have to say, you know, that's kind of a minority, 10-15%. It's actually a watershed for them, you know, the geographical concept of consolidating a lot of stuff that's either in the water basin, literally, into a river that's going to kind of flow and become, have its own identity, or the idea that people on Good to Great are deliberately experienced managers. We only accept experienced managers on Good to Great. If they're not experienced, they do managing your friends first. And they're consolidating a lot of stuff that they know. So the principle of consolidation is very much at play. They're kind of just bringing stuff together that they've experienced in all of their life and all of their career so far, and they're turning it into something, you know, something real for them. That's Good to Great.
Okay. And you said that building strong brigades, why do you call it
brigades? Because chefs are called brigades.
Are they?
In the kitchens, yeah, it's a brigade.
It's
a French term. It's originally a French term. And the parallels between the military and running a kitchen, you know, have historically been very, very strong. So that is of interest. There must be something of a military approach to get, you know, to get a kitchen through a shift. But this now gets very interesting because there are so many more women who are leading brigades in kitchens. So building strong brigades it's not just for chefs, and Good to Great is not just for front of house. If you're a chef and you would define yourself as a chef, then building strong brigades is for you. It's fast and furious. It's tools to manage people when you're live, and it's 2 days and only 2 days. Whereas Good to Great operates in a much wider sense. So many chefs do Good to Great. And on building strong brigades, it is only chefs. You know, they feel like front of house don't really understand the pressure that you're going to encounter in the kitchen. They rant a little bit about life in the first half an hour, and that rant has to happen. It's kind of part of the process some of the time. And then we settle down, and it's team coaching more than anything. You know, what are your challenges that you're facing? We claim as coaches that we've got 150 tools up our sleeve, or management, things that are worth knowing about management. And if you want it, we've got it. We'll talk about it. They think about how they apply it. They go away for a week and they possibly will apply some of the stuff. They'll come back and tell the other people who, again, are, you know, people from other bar and restaurant groups, mostly restaurant groups, you know, what happened when they tried it out. And if they tried it out and they say, yes, it emphatically worked, then the other people in the group are going to say, well, then I am definitely going to give it a go. Even if they tried it and it didn't work and they say, I'm going to do it again, but I'm going to amend it. Even then people are saying, yeah, this has some validity. You know, so rather than the feedback sandwich, for example, we talk about 12 components of giving people feedback, which enable feedback to go well. you know, describing behaviors rather than describing the person, not being evaluative but being descriptive, for example, looking for the underlying cause that is causing the wanted or the unwanted behavior, for example, being calm, for example, and about six other facets of good process when it comes to giving feedback, which most managers, even when they're close to retirement, they're never going to be including all of those parts of good process when they're giving people feedback. But irrespective, you know, the rules for giving feedback, for example, can be really, really, really useful.
One of the things you talk about is moving to a multi-site type of situation for a restaurant. So you're a restaurant, you've got one restaurant, and all of a sudden you've got three restaurants, and managing that. What are the sort of key issues associated with that?
Again, it's not doing the same things better. It's not getting around your bars, your restaurants, your businesses as often as possible. That is being seen to be a good operations manager. Actually, being a good operations manager is working with the idea that you can do just as much work in your underpants on a Monday morning, thinking about how you're going to plan your week, you know, how you're assigned businesses. It's usually about five or six. Most operations managers have about that many. And it's about doing different things rather than continuing to do what you did before and imposing on your managers the way that you did it when you were running one of those restaurants typically. You know, so with that in mind, and again, all the credit for all of this goes to Phil Eales, ex-Honest Burgers. Again, it was his idea that what I was doing previously, which was just doing stuff for founders, we've split the stage after Good to Great into two. He believed there was a market, and he'd been right for what we call moving into multi-site, which is, it's based around a model that he recently studied a master's at the London School of Economics, just part-time, and he encountered a business model which is ITO, inputs, throughputs, and outputs. And it's the idea that the operations manager has to be managing not just the input. The inputs are what the manager is doing to make their business strong. Throughputs are happening at the time, and the outputs are the result of that. We've amended that into what we call EITO, Environment Input Throughputs Outputs. Phil leads this course with another colleague that is quite high profile in the business, Chantal Wilson. We brought her in to co-run that with him. They do the three mornings together. They kind of introduce managers it into EITO, and we really unpack it, we really bring it to life. And then on all three afternoons, I do an extended coaching piece. You know, so over the three afternoons, the people in the groups are really getting a second layer of understanding what coaching is, because as you'd expect, you know, a good operations manager is really a very, very good coach.
I want to talk about coaching in a minute, and a little bit in something a little bit weird, but and the last course you run as a founder as coach, which I presume is for the owner of the multi-chain site.
Yes, again, it is. It's I am responsible for Good to Great and the founders, and we have a colleague, Drew Gladwell, who runs Hawksmoor in Woodwharf. He has 140 in his team. He's taking on overall responsibility for building strong brigades. Chantal has overall responsibility for moving into multi-site, and Phil is his baby, is managing your friends mostly. So founders, you know, that is really, really interesting. The idea is that they can come and share experiences under a heading each time. So you said founder as coach. That was the first one we launched. Of course, they wanted to do some stuff on coaching. So for all of the founders programs, we like to learn. Of course, we do ourselves. So we bring in independent experts to come and run those programs for us. And it tends to be me, the interviewer, and them, the responder. You know, I'm asking them about pure coaching, for example, or I'm asking, we work with a chap called Ian Henderson, who is chairperson of AML, a branding and consultancy business, for example. And he's got what he calls the three B's, which are ways that make a brand really coherent and consistent. And again, so we have a little bit of structure to it. We really build, it's a 3.5 hour breakfast session. We really get people engaging with the process by sharing examples of how they might use the new information in their businesses. It's very activity driven. We've run three so far. We've done founder as coach. We've done what we call managing difficult conversations, you know, because founders are, of course, they're coming into the business sometimes without any management experience at all, you know, and those tricky conversations, we have an expert called Sarah Cartwright, who's with a business called Management Futures, and she really gets people going. She really enlivens the concept of, you know, having those fierce conversations, having those difficult conversations and what it's all about. You know, people come away, of course, refreshed. And the same principle applies, which is for them, there isn't much in hospitality, despite the fact that it looks like there's quite a lot where people can get together and share ideas. Definitely not naming any names now, but I've been part of quite a few of them. And I've found them very male dominated, very bland, quite boozy. You know, and the market has shifted, and we have encountered, because we found quite a lot of new clients by doing this, that, you know, they simply want to be doing the same thing as everybody else, which is sitting down in a reasonably confidential environment with a purpose, you know, just to share the realities of the lives that they're leading when they're setting up their businesses.
Mm. That's sort of the main products you guys run, and there's a lot of coaching in there. Because we're a wine show, and we've been talking about hospitality, but you also train sommeliers and wine waiters, etc. What are the skills that you think that you can help sommeliers and waiters? What are the gaps that they often have that you guys can fill?
Now, this is a whopping great big generalization, but the Herman Brain Dominance Profile does tell us the extent to which, you know, people tend to be left-brained, or they tend to be right-brained. Mm. Sommeliers tend to be a bit more left-brained. They like dealing with an input at a time, whereas right-brainers are kind of really happy with the idea of what we think of as multiple inputs. So left-brainers, you know, they're structured, they're ordered, they really kind of respect the whole process of wine from the very start, you know, the terroirs. And by the way, I am not an expert in wine. I started a wine committee in Pitcher and Piano, and the first thing they did was fire me. Yeah. From my own wine committee. I'm very interested in wine, but I'm very interested in what you can buy in Waitrose for $9.99. And I don't know much about the technical side of the process, but sommeliers invariably do. So they're very, very left-brained. So they're, you know, they're logical, they're analytical, they're structured, they're ordered, they're disciplined. And so if there's anything that they're going to get that we've got, and I'm, you know, really stressed that nearly all of them have already got this. It's the kind of the humanistic side of the process. You know, it's encountering a table, having a great body of knowledge, but actually building a relationship with that table, you know, where are your interests. So being able to sort of almost coach the people at the table into their wine choice rather than to tell them into their wine choice. Mm. Again, I don't really know if that makes sense. I would say right off the top of my head, that sommeliers represent something like 5% or less of the people who are on the course. Yeah. So whopping great big generalization there. But certainly they respect training, they respect order, they respect discipline, they respect knowledge. And I hope that we're giving them something else on top of that to enable them to sommelier well.
Okay. And you talked a lot about coaching. And one of the gaps that I see in our business is that we have students, and, you know, we deliver course materials for them, and they can consume those. But sometimes you get students who really struggle with the course. And one of the things that we've been trying to do is move away from just delivering the materials, but trying to give a layer of support and guidance to them for when they are struggling and how to help them with the course. So, for example, we had some problems with some students a while ago, and they couldn't keep up with the course. They just literally couldn't keep up. So I got my team together and we sat down and we said, well, how do we deal with this? How do we give them guidance and what they should do and how they should focus on things so that my team can give them some good feedback about how to approach things? What coaching or what could you say about that for that? Remember, we are talking about quite theoretical things here. Yeah.
So my mind turns to the fact that when I did my WSET, which would be about 1995, it was very technical, it was very classroom, it was very, you know, this is the answer. And I really struggled with that because I'm right-brained myself. And I know that wine training has massively moved on since then. It's much more interactive now. But my mind
it's still very technical and classroom-oriented. I'm trying to work out how to get out of that.
Yes, and my mind turns to finance for non-financiers. So if I've got this right, there are plenty of programs out there, finance for people who don't have a financial brain. And I think the same thing applies. If I were to bring the Herman Brain Dominance profile to this, for example, I would say that engaging people in wine, the teacher, the trainer, the coach has to acknowledge all four thinking styles, which create four different learning styles. So the blue is, you know, help me understand the theory of wine. Green would be teach me about wine where one piece of knowledge is building on the one I got before. So it's sequential and ordered. A green person isn't necessarily interested in the theory of wine, but the way that they like to learn things is they're at the beginning of the journey. They want to know where they are on the journey. They want to know what is in it for them at the end of the journey. A red thinking style would create someone who's only interested in the interactive side of the learning process. So they want to be on their feet. They want to be thinking about what this has got to do with people, for example. You know, that does Rioja have a reputation as being a wine that Spanish people like or old men like? And again, I'm really out of my comfort zone here thinking about the wines themselves. But, you know, the personality of each wine, for example, is more likely to attract a red style thinker and a yellow thinker. You know, what's at the forefront of the industry? What is English champagne, for example? I know there's no such thing. Technically, there can't be because champagne is an area. But, you know, stuff that is going on because of, you know, where the wine world is changing, that might interest them. So more conceptual, more holistic. And if I was saying to someone, if you want to engage all four thinking styles, you know, that might be a starting point for thinking about how you do it. Rather than it was blue, 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 logical, analytical, really, yeah. Really, when I did mine. And I think it's changed a lot. I've got a friend whose daughter works for Hennessy. She sells spirits and she's a really humanistic person. She goes into small independent bars and restaurants and she engages with them right from the start in a very, very little theory. She's got enough theory in her head to make the whole thing work. But, you know, she's a really, really engaging person who's really good at engaging people.
Okay then, Stephen, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. Lovely to meet you, Chris.